Are you an entrepreneur that would like to quickly free up and create more cash flow and lasting wealth? Welcome to the Chris Miles Money Show. Chris Miles is a cash flow expert and the financial advocate for the entrepreneur. Chris will teach you how to create more freedom and more prosperity right now, not about saving 25 to 40 years from now. It's all about creating wealth and prosperity today. He's been featured on U.S. News, CNN Money, Bankrate.com, interviewed internationally on TV and radio, and has a high reputation for getting his clients fast, life-altering financial results with his company, Money Ripples. Learn more at MoneyRipples.com. Now, here's your host, Chris Miles.
Hello, my fellow Ripplers. This is Chris Miles, cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor. Hey, I welcome you here again this week for a great episode that I've been waiting to share for weeks. Hey, before I do so, quick reminder, check out our website, MoneyRipples.com. You know, make sure you check it out. There's great stuff there. Also, if you haven't listened to some of the previous podcasts, keep checking that out. And by the way, keep sharing. Thank you so much for doing so, because I love what you guys have been able to do and with the people's lives we've been able to bless. Because, you know, this show really is about you guys. It's really about how we best help you be able to create the life that you love. Not someday, but today. It's about creating that cash flow and freedom and prosperity now. And I'm grateful to have you guys join us because, you know, every episode I do, it's all focused towards how can I help you guys the most. So today I want to do something different. You know, I want to talk about a show that, or an episode that really I've been waiting to share for weeks. And it's really been inspired by things that I see around the world, how I see people trending and their thought patterns and what they say, what they're talking about or not, or and what they're thinking or what they're not thinking, you know. And when I say not think, I mean, literally, they don't think, they just act. And it's interesting seeing this world of social media, especially. I mean, I'm sure many of you guys notice, like me, you get kind of sick and tired of hearing some of the complaints on social media, some of the whining and griping. And so I want to address that now, because it really stems from something that's interesting. Because, you know, we live in a world where there's more information than ever, more accessible information, but there's also more ignorance. Now, granted, there's always been ignorance. But the fact is that ignorance really is still there. It's still very prevalent. And now it's even worse in some ways, because given the information that we have, there's a lot more people that just don't know. And there's something that I've always told people over the years that, you know, I like to be right. There's no doubt. I'm sure you do too. But I have to admit that I'm wrong in many cases to know that I'm right. And there, I remember there was a time in my life that there was a guy doing a training. He had been trained in a program called Landmark. And in this training, he was training people in our office. And we had some very successful people in the room, like very successful people. I mean, one guy, in fact, had a $120 million real estate empire. And throughout this weekend, the guy kept saying things. He'd declare something or he'd make a statement. But then he'd say, you know, but I don't know truth. And he would say it over and over. I remember thinking, that's kind of a weird thing to say. He's like, yeah, but I don't know truth. So whenever he made a claim, he'd always say, but I don't know truth. And finally, by the second day, this guy that had this huge real estate empire, it was very influential, had lots of followers. I was one of them. And he raises a hand. He says, you know what? I'm kind of getting sick and tired of hearing you say you don't know truth, because you know what? I know there's truth. And of course, in response, the guy says, well, I don't know truth, so you'll tell me. Like, what do you mean? You know, tell me more. And so the guy goes on. He's like, well, I know that God lives, and I know that, you know, that dollars follow value, and I know that these economic principles are true. You know, a lot of the things that I teach you guys, right? He's like, I know all these things are true. And what ensued was about almost an hour conversation back and forth about this. You know, and really just the guy firing questions back at this other guy, right? Just saying, hey, okay, well, okay, so yeah, you know that. Well, how do you know, right? How do you know that for a fact? You know, and yeah, and you started just challenging him and questioning him. And it finally came down to, it went way beyond just whether he knew something was truth. It went to aspects of you saying, like, you know, I bet with a lot of people, like, yeah, maybe you know that, but does everybody know this truth? And that's what was kind of the aha for me, because I was agreeing with the guy that challenged, you know, brought up the challenging question. I was like, yeah, like, I know there's truth. I know there's true principles. I've seen them work. I know they work for a fact. But the point he brought up was, yeah, but not everybody sees that. And he kind of brought up the biggest obstacle for you is that because you believe that it's true and that everything else is false, that people that don't know it's truth yet or not, they can't, you can't bridge that gap. You can't really connect with them. You can't really help them see that. And by the way, who says that what everything you know is truth? You could possibly be wrong, couldn't you? And it got to the point where he even said, like, I bet you this has been a challenge with you in your leadership position too, with leadership with people. You've had this issue. And I kid you not, this guy who had a $120 million empire started bawling. He's like, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I've had issues with that, you know, basically with judgment and things like that. And he's like, okay, well, and the other guy, the moderator, the facilitator said, all right, well, is our communication complete? And he said, yeah, it is. And the guy sat down and was quiet and open from that point forward. And that's the thing that was awesome. Like, it was a big epiphany for me because I was kind of experiencing it with this guy, right? I wasn't as bold as he was, and I wasn't as firm as knowing what I thought was true. But it was blew my mind because I realized, hey, you know what? Maybe I don't always know truth. Maybe I could be wrong because obviously I am not perfect. I don't have perfect knowledge. No one on this planet does, no matter how educated they think they are. The truth is the vast knowledge is out there. We know like a pinprick out of an entire sphere, an entire earth of knowledge. We know like a little piece of sand in comparison to all the knowledge that can be learned out there. Even the most intelligent people don't know crap. And that's kind of my point here is that, you know, the problem I see today is that so many people are claiming that their way is right and the other way is wrong. And if you don't think the way that I do, you're a freaking idiot, right? I mean, that's pretty much what we're hearing out there. It's like, you're an idiot, you're delusional, if you're talking about right and left in terms of politics, you know, either you have this too big of a heart but no brain, or you're basically no heart, you know, and you're all about money and all this kind of stuff, right? Like, there's all these kinds of things going back and forth. And my wife and I have been talking about this a lot lately because, you know, we've been involved with different things and certain things with politics, or, you know, talking about certain issues. And it's funny because we look at it, we say, are we right or left? Because sometimes we're like, oh yeah, we definitely lean more towards the conservative, what people would call the conservative side, or, you know, but there's a lot of times we agree with people on the liberal side, you know? It's interesting because when you think of that you're like, well, what are all these people disagreeing about? There's so much extremist, and the media is not helping at all. I mean, the media is trying to show you that there's so much polar opposites going on right now that they're making it seem like there's a big fight going on when most of America, and really most of the world, probably falls somewhere in the middle of the spectrum, not on these extremes they keep presenting. But do they show that? No. They show you the extremes because it's more exciting. It gets people riled up. It gets the dopamine going in your body, gets all these things going, these chemicals going that keeps you hooked, right? And so they're showing you all this junk, and then it gets people fired up. And then when you're on social media, because people aren't connecting with each other face to face physically so much, what's happening is that now they're sitting behind a computer in their safety, and they're creating their own little hormonal rush by creating conflict. And this is just getting ridiculous. It's getting out of hand. And my point to you guys is that even though I teach things that I believe are truly true, right? I really do believe they're true and they're very useful. The thing is that it's very possible I could be wrong. Let me give you an example. You know, if you would listen to this show even just 3 years ago, right? Just about 3 years ago, during 2015, I was thinking I was pretty clever by coining the term Y2K15. And why did I do that? Because I looked at trend patterns of the stock market. I was looking at the patterns just like a technical analyst would when they're looking at the charts. And they're saying, oh my gosh, we've had a huge run up. This looks a lot like the 90s. So if we got, you know, 6 years up, 3 years down with the 90s, right? So went 6 years up and then 2000, 2001, 2002 were down years. You had six up, three down. And then the next 4 years from 2003, 4, 5, 6 were up, and then 7 and 8 were down, right? And so, and then of course, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and let's see what it's 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. That's 6 years in a row. Yep, I got that right. So 2015 would have been a seventh year up in a row, which, by the way, in the market's pretty dang unheard of. It doesn't happen very often. In fact, it's the kind of run we've only seen in the market today has only happened like once other time in history. That's it, right? I mean, this is very unusual for a market run-up. And so I predicted Y2K15. I said, hey, there's no way this could be a sustainable trend. And so guess what? 2015 was down. The last day of the market closed down, bringing the overall annual average or the annual return, you have 2015 down to negative 0.1%. What's happened since then? Well, to the date of this show, since the beginning of 2016 till now past mid of 2018, it's gone up almost 35% in the market. So, Chris, good job. You called it, didn't you? So, and I was very passionate about it. And I showed the trends. I showed what happened and all that kind of stuff. Now, do I think there's going to be a market correction? Of course, there always is. But was I wrong? Yeah. I mean, that little pullback, that little Y2K15 sure was no Y2K, was it? I mean, it seriously went down 0.1% and then shot up another 35. And so I was wrong. I was totally wrong. What did I do wrong? Well, I was looking at charts only. I wasn't looking at what in the marketplace would cause it, would give them an excuse to bring it down. There really wasn't much going on. There really wasn't anything happening. And so that's a big thing. How about more recently? More recently, I've talked to you guys like about Bitcoin. Like I ripped on Bitcoin. Now, I still stand behind what I said about Bitcoin. But I'll tell you, as I've started to research more about blockchain, I've started to realize that there's things outside of Bitcoin that could be very good investments. There are things that deal with actually with Bitcoin or Ethereum and things like that, with those different types of blockchain type currencies, where the currency may or may not be a great investment depending on the day, right? But there's a lot of companies surrounding it with protocol and security and things like that that can actually be really, could be really profitable. Now, I'm going to tell you guys to go start buying into these companies. Nope, not at all. And just as much as I wouldn't tell you to go ride a stock market wave, right? Because there's way too much education and things behind that, way more than I can do like in a short little episode, right? Or even a couple episodes. There's just way too much. You know, my thing is always personal empowerment. You know, you guys getting the education for yourselves, you know? I love that Ronald Reagan philosophy, trust but verify. Or as one of my clients brought up that I think is even better, is trust and verify. Trust and verify. Say, okay, cool. That could be true. Why not verify it? That's why I sat down with a guy that actually has made lots, like millions and millions of dollars in blockchain, not from just selling it to people, but actually legitimately making it in different currencies, whether it be Bitcoin, Ethereum, or whatever, and in other things with different companies, made millions of dollars doing it. I sat down with him for over an hour straight, just chatting away and just figuring out and understanding. Not to mention, I already heard him talk for an hour about it before I sat down with him one-on-one. You know, and by the way, I'll probably have him on our show here pretty soon. Oh my gosh, Chris, I can't believe you would do that. Well, yeah, because you know what? I'm looking for truth. I'm always seeking for truth. If that means that maybe in certain aspects I was wrong, absolutely. Now, I'll tell you, there's a lot of pundits out there that will not change their tune even though they've been proven wrong. You know, there's guys like Dave Ramsey that still proclaim certain things, truths about stock markets and things like that that have never been true, but he still claims it. You know, things that he might have heard 20 years ago that really weren't backed up very well by those claims. But he'll still claim it. Why? Because when you're in a position like we are, where you publicly have to admit things, it's pretty tough to kind of eat your own words and say, you know what, maybe I was wrong, right? And I'll tell you, it's such a cool thing. I actually respect people that actually do that. People will change their tune. You know, I've watched Susie Orman do this. Now, I've ripped on Susie in the past as well, but there's a lot of things I've heard her say now, even though it's not completely in line with what I teach, she's actually gone closer to what I teach than when she was maybe 10 years ago. 10 years ago, she was way out in left field. But after the recession, she kind of started changing her tune a little bit, and she started to say some things that were actually pretty wise. And so when I read her articles, I'm like, you know what? I agree with a lot of what she says. Not everything. I mean, definitely not especially about certain things with the stock markets and mutual funds. But there's a lot of things that when she gives advice, she gives pretty sound advice. This is Susie Orman, guys. People that over time can also change. I respect her that now I haven't ever seen her say, you know what, I used to say this, but I was wrong. I haven't seen her say that. But I have seen her gradually change her tune, like gradually morph closer to what I'm teaching, just not quite all the way there yet, you know? And so I think that's pretty cool. You know, so there's a lot of things that'll come up that will block you from finding truth. You know, one, like I know a lot of times people say things are too good to be true, right? That just sounds too good to be true. You know, people ask me about real estate. They keep saying, when's the real estate bubble going to burst? guys, guess what? We're not even in a real estate bubble. You know, now I could be wrong, but I'll tell you from every, I mean, even the people that are critics of real estate are still looking at it and saying, no, it's not a bubble at all. In fact, this is way different than what it was even 10 years ago. By the way, the last six recessions, only once have house prices dropped during a recession, and that was the last one we had. The previous five recessions, house prices at least creeped up just a tiny bit. Prices still continued to rise, even if they went very slowly or almost flat on some of those recessions. Other ones, they rose significantly because that's where people put their money. And so, you know, so yeah, you might have data to back that up, but you know what? It doesn't mean that the next time it couldn't happen again, right? You know, but, you know, my claim is that real estate is not a bubble. I still think that the stock market is a bubble. You know, so when I look at the stock market, I still think of, okay, I know what the historical averages are. I know it's been averaging lately. You know, it's going to do one of two things over the next 4 or 5 years. It's either going to go flat for about 4 or 5 years, or it's going to maybe go up and then dip down and then maybe recover a little bit, or up and then dip and then we're in the middle of a dip, or it'll go down and then come back up a little bit. Either way, I think by the time you're looking at this and 3 or 4, even like 3 years or so, the market will be lower than what it is now, right? You know, that's the thing I definitely predict. I don't know how it'll do it, but I know that it will. You know, I know that it's just the way that the market has to create the equilibrium of how it typically grows. And then I'm talking about this over the last almost 70 years. By the way, I was just looking at this morning, just kind of watching patterns in different decades. It's really fascinating to see what happens. You know, there's decades where it's tripled in value or more than tripled or quadrupled. And there's only really one decade, if you're looking at just every 10 years of certain years, right? One decade where it went down, which was just back in the 2000s. So I mean, there's all kinds of things that can happen. So yeah, but when I hear people say things are too good to be true, like when I might think the market's too good to be true, it may not be. Maybe it'll keep being truer, you know? Maybe it'll keep rising. We don't know, right? When people say it was too good to be true, like with you know, the thing I did with Bailey Stewart about the credit, I've had a few people come back and say, this just sounds too good to be true. People will pay me to be an authorized user of my card that they don't even have access to. They just have access to the credit history. Yeah. Yeah, they do. I've seen it. I've done it. Yes. But had I not experienced it, yeah, it would challenge my belief system too. But a lot of times people are like, oh, it's too good to be true. Or they think like, oh, returns that, you know, making more than 5, 6, 7% a year. Is that possible? Yeah. Like you should be expecting nothing less than that, you know? But that's in my world, right? Again, you have to be willing to question everything that you've known to be true. In fact, I love the question that I was asked by one of my early mentors. He said, if something you thought was true today or something you thought wasn't true today actually was, when would you want to know about it? So let me repeat that question. If something you thought wasn't true actually was, when would you want to know about it? Or vice versa. If something you thought was true really wasn't, when would you want to know about that? And these are the kind of things we got to question ourselves, right? These are the things we got to understand and figure out. You know, I remember there's a guy that was a pretty influential guy in the dental community. He flat out told not just me, but even in front of a whole audience of dentists and orthodontists, he said, you know, he was talking about actually blockchain, funny enough. He's like, you know, blockchain, I'm willing to be open to it. Like maybe I'm wrong, even though I've had very strong opinions, maybe I'm wrong. And then he looks at me, he says, and take Chris here. You know, Chris obviously is helping a lot of you guys with life insurance and how to create cash flow and bank it and things like that. And, you know, that whole infinite banking strategy. He's like, many of you know I'm verbally have not been a fan of it, but I could be wrong. And I kind of smiled and said, you are, you know, but again, it's not about his knowledge. I've had very, very intelligent investors have their minds blown when I show them like how to actually use life insurance differently than even how life insurance agents teach it and actually be able to create more money, more returns on the same cash, the same strategies they're already doing with their investing. I'm showing them how to make money twice with the same money. You know, and so, yeah, it does require education to be able to keep your mind open. So don't be caught in the trap of saying this sounds too good to be true. Because if the whole thing is too good to be true, then it probably is. You got to question that. You know, you got to question, like, is my mind putting limits? Is it putting that kind of scarce limits on me to prevent myself from accepting something that could actually create a greater life, something that could be true? You know, here's another example. You know, there's people that talk about immigration, right? And this is kind of like one of the political ones my wife and I have talked about. This is an interesting one because economics is, I mean, if you think about the definition of economics, it's a study of scarce resources. They're already teaching about scarcity. They think that there's only so many resources in the world. How do they divide it up? That's been the traditional teaching of economics. But what I've found to be true, and also I know other economists have started to gravitate away from scarce resources because there's also things such as be able to innovate, right? We can create innovation. You know, people in the 1950s, people thought we'd be starving to death because of overpopulation. There are still people today that believe we have overpopulation. You know, my wife made a comment because of a woman that was a surrogate. She was actually carried a baby for another woman. And someone said in a rude comment, of course, on social media saying, well, hey, maybe this is God's way of saying we shouldn't have any more children. Now, you're talking to a guy with 8 kids here. Now, I think I have a lot of kids, right? But I also believe that the earth is more than abundant. And she said, she's like, really, you believe that we're overpopulating the earth? He's like, yeah, because people are starving, people are impoverished, you know, which, by the way, has nothing to do with that aspect. I'll talk about that in a second. But he's saying like, oh, yeah, it's horrible. You know, and she said, yeah, have you ever driven across the United States to see if there's overpopulation? Have you ever driven across Texas? We drove across Texas and New Mexico into Colorado and Utah. We drove into places that were like, there could be seriously hundreds of millions more people just in the state of Texas. You know, if you think about it, Japan, I actually used to live in Japan. Japan has half the population of the United States, or just under half, right? Now, Japan, the area, the square mileage in the area of Japan is about the size of Montana in the United States. But only about 10% or so of it's occupied. The rest of it is just wilderness because they're very good at living together. Now, they are tight, right? Tighter than I'm comfortable with personally, but they're relatively tight. They do live in like, apartment complexes and things like that. I've been there. I know. But I've also taken a train through Japan, and most of it is just gorgeous wilderness, just bamboo trees and mountains and just uninhabited. There's a lot of uninhabited space in Japan. You could fit more. I mean, imagine the U.S. population, half the U.S. moving to Montana, only taking up 10% of it. That's Japan. You don't tell me that we can't have more people. I mean, they used to think in the 50s that we would starve to death by 1965. Guess what? We proved them wrong. There's more than enough and to spare this earth. Now, I don't mean us to be bad managers of our resources, to be bad stewards. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying be productive. I'm saying, you know, don't consume, you know, don't consume in a way that's wasteful, right? Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being a wise steward, no matter how big or small this planet is. But it's interesting because people believe in that scarcity. And that's also at the heart of the immigration issue. I mean, really, most people that argue against immigration, there's a few different arguments. One, they say people shouldn't come over illegally, right? Which I don't think anybody disagrees with people trying to come over illegally. Everybody wants people to come over legally. We want to protect our borders. I think every side of the argument would say, yes, we need to protect our borders against terrorism and things like that. You know, we need to protect our borders against dangerous people. Of course, no one disagrees with that. Or at least very, very few would disagree with that, right? But what the argument is people are saying, no, let them cross the borders. And then the other side is saying, no, keep them out. We got to worry about our own issues. Which, by the way, there's a little bit of scarcity on both sides of these issues, you know, because, yeah, you don't want to go either extreme. You know, we got to protect our borders. By the way, protecting borders and immigration are two separate things because most people don't come across where we're building fences. Most people just fly into an airport, just so you know. My wife, by the way, was an undocumented immigrant. She would be one of those quote unquote, you know, dreamers, right? That came in the United States in the early 80s. You know, she came over as a child. Her dad brought her over from Venezuela and they were undocumented for a long time. But you know what they try to do? One, they paid taxes. They didn't use any welfare. They didn't want to use welfare, even though they could have. They didn't want to because they wanted to provide for themselves. They went from a middle class lifestyle to a poor class in the state of Florida. They worked 3 jobs. The dad worked 3 jobs. Mom worked 1 trying to provide for their family. And they tried to do it in a way that was under the table because they were afraid that they'd get kicked out of the country eventually. You know, they had a certain time visa, but they by the time you try to get through the whole immigration process. By the way, if you think it's just like going to the DMV to become a U.S. citizen, you are badly mistaken. That's one truth you need to check. You know, I've known people that are Canadians, you know, probably one of the safest places to immigrate from, right? And, you know, one of the places that people would be more than willing to accept as citizens. I've had people that are Canadian citizens spend 10 years trying to get their citizenship. So don't tell me it's simple as just going waiting in line at the DMV, because you often will fill out paperwork and you'll wait months, if not years, waiting for a staff member to finally look at it. And so it's very common for people with actual legal documents, solid, you know, actual green cards, expire and then become now people, illegal immigrants, because they're trying to wait for their citizenship. That's hugely common. My wife, I mean, she finally became a full-fledged citizen, I think it was late 90s or early 2000s, you know. But she, what she tried to do, she tried to get straight A's through school so she wouldn't draw attention to herself. She tried to be the perfect citizen, right? She was trying to do everything possible to be a good citizen and produce. And by the way, she has. She has done some amazing good in this planet. And the truth is, most people that are immigrating here are actually want to be here for freedom. Because even those that do walk thousands of miles, why in the heck would they do that, risking their life? Even someone who's trying to like traffic people, they don't do that. I mean, very, very few people ever try to traffic people across the border, because there's better places to traffic, right? But even come across the border here, why would they risk their lives with their children and their families to get here? Why? Because they see that there's potential abundance better than where they live. If you think that somehow like they could just have the kind of life, you know, that anybody can have an abundant life, you know, in their countries, hey, I'm not saying that's not true. I'm just saying it's dang hard. And if you were in a place where, if you lived in a city where it's like worse than inner city Detroit, where you're seeing things get shot up, people getting shot, your friends, family, neighbors getting shot, would you keep living in that place? I mean, what would cause you to want to walk 1,000 miles, maybe to walk to Alaska, for example? What would make you want to walk to Alaska from the mainland of the United States? You know, what would drive you to do that? You got to ask yourself, why would any rational, sane person do that? And by the way, do they spend time on Google figuring out what the best place to cross is? Like, oh, well, let's find the perfect gate to cross. Or they just go to wherever their friend said, like, head north, right? And so I bring this up because it's such a hot topic for people, even right now, especially right now. But I bring that up because so many people claim to know truth. They claim to know both sides. And the truth is, both sides have truth. Both sides have truth, but you really got to question your premise. Even if you're passionate about it, say, do I really know? By the way, do I know these people personally? Do I have personal experience with these things? Or am I just going off of what I've heard other people say? Am I just spouting off crap? Because if you don't have personal experience, and I've learned this, and this is one of the things I have to be accountable for on a show like this, is I can't teach what I don't know. I remember I had a friend, a roommate, that used to say, Chris, you don't go where you don't know. Because if I tried to claim that I knew something and I didn't, he would call bull on me. And I had to deal with that for months, right? It got me in the habit of not trying to make claims that I don't know about. And I know occasionally when I have made those claims, oh my gosh, I can feel it. Like I can feel I have a weak position, because I'm like, do I really know that truth? Where do I get that truth from, that supposed truth? You know, and so that's the kind of thing I want you guys to consider, is that maybe you don't know truth either. Maybe you're just like all the rest of us humans on the planet trying to figure it out. And I'd hope that you're a truth seeker. I hope that you're listening to the show because you are someone who's seeking for truth. You're looking for another perspective. You're looking for hope. You're looking for something more than what you've had. You're trying to question all the quote unquote truths you've been taught about money, about business, about everything. And by the way, I'm just teaching what I claim to be truth, but I don't know truth either. I'm just teaching the best that I know too. I just know that I've figured a few things out that have worked really well. But, you know, I've also learned the more and more I teach this, the more I realize that when people say, hey, what's that magic investment? I don't know. Well, who are you? Because I've seen it's not about the investment you pick. It's about who you are as a person, and then figuring out which investment best aligns with who you are, which ones are maybe you're most passionate about or you know the most about already. You know, I had a client who was wondering if they were even the right fit for me anymore because they said, hey, we totally changed direction on you. We're going to figure out how to invest. And now we all of a sudden are going to buy this tortilla business. And now we're changing directions on you. We feel like we've ruined the plan. You know, does it still make sense to work with you? And my response was, of course it is. Absolutely. Because I mean, this is even better because what if, I mean, obviously if you can buy a business for very cheap, make thousands of dollars a month, that's better than making maybe $100 or $200 a month from passive income. If you can make way more money, then yeah, that's awesome. Let's move forward. Let's make sure we have all our T's crossed, our I's dotted, and do it the right way. And by the way, is it great to bring you more joy? If it does, then awesome. This is about your life. This is about what's true for your life and what's aligned with who you are. So guys, that's my challenge for you is I want you to understand that you may not know truth just like I don't know truth. We might know a few things, but you know, we got to keep questioning. We got to keep learning and growing. And as we do so, we'll get closer and closer. And hopefully at some point in the eternities, we will know that full truth. So my challenge to you is be open-minded, question everything, question yourself, question what you hear, but don't just doubt it. Just be open. Be open to wondering what's possible, what's true. Guys, I hope you make a wonderful and prosperous week. We'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to The Chris Miles Money Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and make us a part of your daily routine. And check out our blogs and learn more about Chris, his services, and how we can help you at moneyripples.com. Join us next time on The Chris Miles Money Show.